welcome to episode number 101 of the Peer Geek Podcast. And as always, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you here. And wherever you're joining us from today, I'm super excited to welcome our guest in Julia Sargent to the show. How are you?
Hello. Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Now, we were talking before that for you, it's a little bit cold in England at the moment. Like, you want to set the scene of where you are and who you serve and what you do?
It is, yes. Hi, I'm calling from Loughborough University today, which is in the East Midlands in England. I currently work in the National Centre for Sport and Exercise Medicine at Loughborough. I'm in the final stages of my doctorate here and just working towards putting my thesis together.
Nice. So does that involve lots of research as well as writing at this point in time, or are you past certain stages and you're up to the final stretch?
Yes, it does. Yeah, I've collected all my data in terms of working with PE teachers in the UK. Sure. And at the moment, it's just finishing off the writing and putting it all together.
Great. So where did your story begin? Because obviously, this is where you are at now. But if we traced right back, how did you get involved in this physical education world? And, what sort of sowed the seed years ago?
Sure. Well, I did an undergraduate degree at the University of Bath and became interested myself personally in digital technology. But it really came to the fore. I did a work placement year where I worked at a school in England and was working within the PE department there. And the school themselves decided to adopt an iPad scheme and became really sort of interested in how the PE teachers themselves and the students were negotiating these devices, trying to incorporate them into PE, and thought, actually, this is something I'd like to look at a bit more. So I did a research project with them and based that in terms of my undergraduate degree. And then a PhD opportunity came up with Ashley Casey, who some of you might be aware of. So I've been working with Ash for the past 3 years now, doing a very, very similar work in looking in terms of, how and why are PE teachers in the UK using digital technology, bearing in mind they're not required to. Mm-hmm. So that's been my kind of focus now for the past 3 years or so.
So it started off as this nice sort of interest that you had, and then you sort of explored it a little bit more so, and then now you've dived right in head first and collecting real research. So to answer your own question, why are people using digital technologies in the UK even though they're not required to? What are you sort of seeing?
Sure. Well, similar, I guess, to my own interests is that these teachers who I've worked with, so it's four teachers across the UK from a variety of different sort of contexts, mainly secondary education, which in the UK is 11 to 18. But they're very much interested in digital technology and interested in bringing that personal interest into their own classrooms. Yeah. And seeing the value in digital technology making things more efficient, more effective, and the desire to do something differently, trying to make sure that those benefits are connected to students learning themselves. But that general sort of interest in, what value and potential can that have for PE?
Yeah, so that trace is very similar to my own path. In 2008, when I first started the website, it was mostly because I was obsessed, I would say, with technologies, and yeah. I also taught phys ed, and I started to weave that into my own teaching and explored it, and got the benefit of that. So is that, like you mentioned, is that still the driving force that you see? It's a passionate teacher who's very interested, and then from there maybe they can leverage that passion to bring other people on board who may be a little bit more skeptical.
Yeah, I think it is largely driven by a personal interest and like you said, seeing the value in our own lives to do things, quicker, more efficiently. But I think, when you try and marry up those two contexts, your home life and actually when we bring it into the classroom, is that sometimes there is that disconnect between, seeing the value for doing things like internet shopping or, playing games, but actually then how do we connect that to students learning and making sure that learning is at that forefront? So there is that drive, that interest, but actually it doesn't perhaps marry up so well when it comes into the classroom because it's got to be that focus then on the students learning.
Yeah, it has to be a bit deeper than, that sort of surface level, I'm interested in technology and here it is, I'm going to employ it in my classroom. And you know, the best stuff that we see usually comes from that place where people have put a lot of thought into why and how, and that maybe even starts sometimes where they even haven't got devices yet, or they haven't got technology. You know, they've got outcomes and goals and things that they want to achieve, and then later on the technology finds its place into that scenario, rather than the flip of that is, oh, wow, we've got some iPads or we've got some whatever device it may be, and let's jam it into a unit. And that, that can be a mistake.
I think it's sometimes identifying what it is you want to achieve with the technology, i.e. from these teachers, it's sort of, you know, what is the outcome? What's the end product that I want to produce? And then how can technology help me to get there? How can it help me to move along that journey? And the same decision, if it doesn't help you to get there, then perhaps it's a, you know, it's a pedagogical decision not to use it in the same light. So,
like any tool, in essence, we would use.
Sure. Yeah. So, it's for these teachers, it seems that the technology hasn't driven their decisions. Mm-hmm. It's that idea of, you know, from my planning, from the outcomes that I want students to achieve, how can I look at technology and the benefits that it affords, and then see if I can tailor this into the classroom. So we see lots of evidence of iPads, videos, YouTube, social media, and those sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of evidence of shiny object syndrome in the school setting still, even now, with schools we work with and stuff that we observe. And you know, I can't think of a bigger example of shiny object syndrome than in the East Coast of the United States, the West Coast of the United States, with the rollout of iPads to every kid in like California or something like that. Big deal that they did. It was worth billions, and it came with no training. So they rolled these devices out and there was like no support, and it was very much driven by let's do this because, rather than the sort of why and how. And you can sort of guess how that went. It ended up being one of the biggest like educational disasters ever. And I think it led down the path of some class action lawsuits for people who'd made these $1 billion deals without really thinking about, you know, the intent behind it. So that's the, that's a severe case, but we do see it. We see schools making decisions based on the wrong things. So if you are a school and you're thinking about leveraging technology, and you may have worked with people, what are some of the things that you're seeing where they're actually getting a benefit that's driven, you know, towards improving the learning outcomes? Like what are some of the projects maybe that you've seen that have worked quite well?
Sure. So I think for the majority of these teachers at first is that it can seem quite gimmicky. Like you say, you're driven by that device. But actually over time, in terms of strategies that teachers that I've worked with have used, is that it's a lot of trial and error. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of trying to identify, you know, what things work well, what things don't perhaps work as well, but actually then reflecting on that use in terms of pedagogy and thinking, right, next time, how can I actually improve that? So it's also about consistency in your use. For these teachers that I've worked with in the UK, it's about establishing routines of practice. So getting yourselves and the students used to the device, and making sure that it's, you know, it's a part of the culture of the classroom. So it's not just an ad hoc piece of device that's brought out every now and again. It's actually sort of embedded into PE.
Be invisible to, you know, what it is that the students are achieving. If it's at that top layer and it's too visible, I think that's when things go down that wrong path, because it becomes too much of a technology.
Sure. And I think for a lot of teachers, is it's, you know, how can we marry up PE with physical activity? And for two of the teachers that I've worked with, they've incorporated digital technology with flipped learning. So delivering content, learning resources for students to learn and understand outside of the classroom. And then when we bring that back into the next lesson, the initial sort of understanding and knowledge has been developed. And then actually the teacher and the students can get into the physical activity more efficiently. Mm-hmm. So actually, digital technology is helping these teachers to maximize and sort of contribute towards students' physical activity time, which I think, you know, is really important for physical educators.
Yeah, and at the heart of that, you know, this is something that I say a lot with the people that we work with, that good teaching is what drove that and made that possible. And you know, the good teaching combined with the tech can absolutely give you more time for the stuff that we think the lesson outcomes, you know, the physical activity or whatever it may be. But at the same time, it's this double-edged sword. And if you roll in there thinking that there's this magic bullet that is just going to change everything for your class, I think you're in for a bit of a bit of a rude awakening.
I mean, some of the teachers that I've worked with talk about positioning themselves as a learner. So it's very much that, you know, I talked about that trial and error idea, but that idea that you and the students are both sort of learning together through this, you know, not positioning yourself as necessarily an expert, especially when, you know, we bring this into the classroom, but actually learning through our use and building upon that, reflecting upon it in terms of, you know, is this getting to the outcome I want to achieve? If not, how can I sort of tailor that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's critical. And unfortunately, a lot of teachers, they have this real issue with not being that focal presence, that person that has all the knowledge and the answers, and they sort of shy away from any particular situation where they may be seen in a different situation. And, you know, I've always found that the best stuff happens when you, for me at least, when I position myself in that learner mindset. And, you know, to be honest, some of the best classes I ever taught were where I was literally probably less competent than some of the students in some of the areas that I taught them in.
Sure.
And they actually had no idea that that was the case, because we were able to leverage technology in a way that augmented the learning outcomes in a way. And, you know, my role changed from being this expert to the facilitator that drove that. And I think that's what excites me about technology, that we can have a different role if we choose to. And I think that's pretty cool. So what are the biggest barriers then that people in the UK and elsewhere are having around the use of technology? Is it still access to devices? Is there other things at play?
I think access is still a big one. I think as well is that if we're trying to look at getting around that access, is for some teachers, they sought to, you know, bring their own devices in from home. But also then we have discrepancies between, you know, their personal devices and the school's use. So, yes, access is a big one. As well, we have restricted curriculum PE time in the UK now. So, you know, for some schools, they don't deliver PE at all. And for others, you know, it's an hour a week. So there's very much, you're restricted by what you can do in terms of that. I think other barriers that teachers face is other teachers' perhaps perception of their use as well. That I've found with the schools that I've worked with is sometimes there isn't that broader focus from the school, you know, an iPad scheme or a buy-in for sort of technology for education. So the PE department or even themselves are working in relative isolation. So there isn't always that sort of support, that network and that consistency across sort of subjects or in the broader school. And I think that's where spaces like Twitter with, you know, broader professional networks, people talking about what practices they're doing and the challenges they've had, has also become a space where teachers seek to find that information and support in other ways.
I mean, there's still this huge gap between those that are doing those sorts of things and those that are not. And bridging that gap is part of the journey of, I guess, what you're hoping to achieve and looking at different ways that that can be done. Is like, what would be the goal of the work that you do if you were to look 2 years into the future and thought, you know, that was successful? What would it look like?
I think for the work that I'm doing is that it's looking at how and why these teachers have got to where they are, but also looking at how they've built and constructed their practice. And it's about, you know, my work's about detailing that. But I think it's about spreading information on, you know, some of the strategies that they've used, i.e. the flipped learning, the trial and error, and providing that information and saying, you know, this is how it's worked in this context and with this teacher, and also may work in your context as well. But it's about, you know, from these teachers, this is about, it's about knowing that information and things that have worked, and then spreading that message to others, whether they do adopt it or not is you know, up to them and their context. But it's about having that information of, you know, how it's worked and why it's enabled them to do the things that they do, to make sure that, you know, people have that information at hand if they choose to look to it.
Yeah, I mean, what's the biggest barrier that the distribution of universities have in today's day and age? Obviously, there's still a lot of work that gets done behind academic walls and paywalls, and, you know, a lot of this great work would be would be appreciated and viewed by lots of people, but it doesn't get seen. So is part of this also looking at ways in which that this communication and information can be dispersed through more frictionless methods?
Yeah, so we have our you know, our typical outputs in terms of things like books and academic journals, but you know, like you say, is that doesn't get necessarily read by a mass audience. So, you know, things
mostly
like speaking
the same
to you,
people read that stuff.
Yeah.
The academics reading it to each other basically.
Yeah, so you know, some of the teachers that I've worked find local teach meets within their area really useful to getting information about what's going on. Yes. So it's you know, opting in is to, you know, can I come and speak about the work that I've done there? Can I, you know, I'm looking to sort of create some resources that I can distribute and things like Twitter, mm-hmm. little sort of case study pieces that can possibly be distributed. But I mean, in terms of, you know, if anyone has any suggestions of ways that they would find useful in terms of picking up this information, then, you know, I can certainly take that on board and awesome.
Yeah,
and try and just fit.
That's the world we're at now. Like, we've got all these different mediums that we can leverage, and you know, there's so much opportunity to share great messages. And I think it would be disappointing if great academic work, and I'm not just talking about work that you're currently working on, but all academic work in the phys ed realm, wasn't shared, because information should be free and it should be liberated. But unfortunately, yep. a lot of the academic world sort of stifles that because of, you know, other sort of things at play. So I love that you've come onto the podcast and you sort of given some insight into that and, you know, where you're headed. Where could people find out more about what you're doing and follow up with you if they had any questions?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is @Julia_Sargent. I also can be contacted via email at j.sargent@elbra.ac.uk, which I can provide to you. You know, in terms of outputs, there's a book coming out early on next year called Digital Technology and Physical Education Global Perspectives, which some of my work features in. So you can find my work out there. But again, looking towards, you know, when I finish my PhD, is I will be publishing my work, and I'll make that available on Twitter and various platforms in terms of ResearchGate and those sorts of things, to make it sort of open to people to read. I'll share that on Twitter and make that known.
Amazing. So, I mean, you're the sort of person that I can definitely get behind and, you know, feel inspired by, because you're sort of carving away, you're researching, you're finding things out in the real world and helping people get those lessons in digestible ways that they can actually act on. And, you know, for that, I really thank you. So thanks for stopping by. We'll be sure to link up any resources that you want to point out or have mentioned during this episode, and
yeah.
look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Jared.
See ya.
Thanks. Bye.